Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
We're doing something different today, guys, in case you didn't notice the enormous headshots. This is the exact opposite of what we normally do when I think about it. Because normally it's one really wide shot from far away that you can kind of see a bunch of detail in the room, but can't really see us. And now we have these really ridiculous, if you're watching the video, we have these ridiculous three large headshots framed.
Yes. Because we're in two different locations.
Yes, this is the first time we've ever done this, I think. Adam, you're still touring, so you're in Wisconsin today, is that right?
I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Ah.
So Neil Gaiman country.
I'm in Neil Gaiman country, actually. I had dinner last night with the lovely and talented Bill Corbett from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks.
Excellent.
Yes.
I was going to say, it's worth mentioning we're doing this over Skype and you're on like hotel or theater Wi-Fi or something. So we may or may not, like there may be some weird drops where one side of us keeps talking and then the other one picks up 3 seconds later where the connection lags out.
I thought the Midwest had the best Wi-Fi because the infrastructure there
is
so easy. Like Kansas City is going
to
get Google Wi-Fi. I get the
right.
Google internet and it's just like fewer regulations, easier to lay down new lines.
Less, more space.
Yep.
I mean, they don't bury stuff. They just put it up on poles is the key. It's much cheaper to do that.
I'm in my dressing room in the theater in Minneapolis. This was the strongest Wi-Fi that I could find. The bus Wi-Fi, I don't think, is quite up to the task of Skyping.
So I can't help but notice that there is we can see you. The guys on the video can't, but there's this weird twig plant behind you. It's like, it looks like the kind of thing that you see in like a doctor's waiting room because it never needs watering.
It's precisely what that is. And I will tell you that given the standard fare of dressing rooms I've seen, I really appreciate any attempt at decoration because most of them feel a lot like a locker room.
So Norm and I came down, I guess about a week ago, to see you guys in Bakersfield, which was actually a really fun Sunday. We just drove down Saturday night, got up Sunday morning, came out, met you guys at the bus, you and Jamie at the buses, and you kind of gave us like the, here's what it's like to be on the tour for a day.
Yeah.
Norm, what did you think about it? Like, are you ready for a tour gig? Are you ready to get on the bus?
I think a month is a perfect amount of time. And the way you're doing it, Adam, is that you're on the bus, you know, most of the time, but then you also fly to some places. And there's some nights that you do get to stay at hotels. I love the idea that you're waking up in a new place every day.
I'm waking up in a new place every day. And in contrast to the last time we did this tour, I am really, really trying to get out every single day. It's quite easy to calcify into the bus and never leave the bus. And then after like five or six cities, you're like, what have I been doing? So I went to a bookstore today. When I'm done with you guys, I might actually go out and buy a scarf. It's lovely to actually see each town that I'm in and actually get, you know, some pictures and some memories of each place. It actually makes it feel much more, strangely, it makes me feel more relaxed having that activity.
Well, like I can understand why people who are, after seeing what it's like on the bus, on the tour bus, because you're on like a rock star tour bus now. I can totally understand why people who
I'm
are
sorry,
like
totally broke tour, up.
Touring
I'm sorry,
a lot.
Will,
oh,
could you
okay.
start that again?
Yeah, I just, so after seeing what it's like on the tour bus, I can kind of imagine, I understand why people who spend a lot of time on the road, like buy PlayStations and Xboxes and all that stuff loaded on there and just play video games for hours and hours and hours a day. Cause like if you don't have other stuff to do and you're driving that whole time instead of parked in a city, it's a little different situation.
That is. And actually, I've got a lot to do. We are working on some new shows for Discovery. As obviously you guys know, I've been blogging every day. So it's like, I've got a task list of things to take care of every day that actually makes the days feel quite full. In real stark contrast to the last time we went on tour.
So the blog post is a good, you mentioned that, they're up pretty much every day on Tested. And they're just little glimpses of the road. Like you talked about, we went to an Army Navy store when we were in Bakersfield with you.
Yeah. My mom reminded me after reading that my dad actually drove a tank when he was stationed in the army in Germany in the late 40s, early 50s. And he loved driving a tank.
And you've been going to thrift stores. There have been flea markets. Some places have been more fruitful than others. Since we've seen you last, have there been places that you really surprised you or things that you've seen that you didn't really expect to see on the road that you really enjoyed?
Well, since you've seen me last, Thanksgiving happened. And Thanksgiving, since there was some travel both before and after by plane, we went into Canada for most of the Thanksgiving week. And in Canada, it was freezing, freezing cold. And with Thanksgiving and the hotel stuff that we're doing, I didn't get out very much. So now we just came back last night on the plane from Regina to Minneapolis. Though our flight was delayed a little bit, I woke up nice and early this morning, so I've actually been able to get some time out today. I went and bought some books for Christmas presents.
Oh, that's great.
What is Thanksgiving like in Canada? What do people do? Are they festive?
It's just Thursday, dude.
Oh, no, it's Thursday. They have a Thanksgiving somewhere in October. So on Thanksgiving, what they do is they wish Americans a happy Thanksgiving.
did the road crew, did you guys all have like a turkey dinner that night or anything like that?
We did. We have an amazing tour manager, the young and incredibly talented Will Brandsetter. And Will organized a beautiful dinner at a restaurant called Moxie's in Calgary. And we had turkey with all the fixings-ish. It was lovely with the whole crew.
And then you also had some poutine in Canada. You couldn't leave Canada without having poutine.
Absolutely. On the first show, so this is something, and I wrote about this in the last couple of days. The road crews really know their food in specific locations. Like, they have their favorite go-to places. And we have a meal after every show, which is kind of like the Hobbit's second breakfast. It's our second dinner.
Elevensies?
Elevensies. There you go. Post-elevensies.
Okay.
And we had some poutine, which is just one of the most delicious things. It's the Canadian version of chili cheese fries. It is French fries slathered in gravy and cheese curds, and often with small modifications on that. It was stunning.
It sounds gross, but it's a wonderful meal. Highly recommended.
I actually even have some, I think, a comment on Tested today about some poutine here in Minneapolis that I'm hoping to try.
Okay. And I know that there was some talk on, I can't remember where, but maybe it was a Bourdain or a Dave Chang show, about Quebec poutine. So you guys are heading there soon, right?
And I know that Bourdain covered specifically the poutine at Pied de Cochon in Montreal, which is a foie gras poutine.
That's the Montreal city?
Yeah. And it's unbelievably good. You can handle like four bites before you feel like you ate a whole chocolate cake. For the San Franciscan listeners, I want to tell you that there is a fantastic Korean fusion version of poutine out there made at Namu on 18th and Dolores, and they call it ganja fries. And it is like French fries slathered in kimchi and oko sauce and kewpie mayo, along with some seaweed and some other like Korean spices that is just like, so delicious. We probably eat that once a week in my house.
There's a bar down in the financial district that has a very traditional poutine as well. And I can't remember the name, but it's on like, it's at like Battery and
I like that Skype Kearney. Cut out just as when Adam, when you mentioned the address, you said Namu on 18th and then Skype cut the connection as if to protect Namu.
No, I want them to have the business. They're not as busy as they should be.
Excellent. So, a couple of things we learned when we were in Bakersfield. One is that there are bus rules.
yes.
I did not realize, but pooping on the bus is strictly forbidden.
It's verboten. Yeah, you don't poop on the bus. The thing is, from what I understand, it's because the buses don't have a masticator, and that's the thing that turns the poop into some sort of slurry that makes it less smelly. I don't know the exact mechanics, but basically no one on the bus wants to smell your poop. So nobody poops on the bus.
If you've ever fixed a marine toilet, you know what a masticator is, and you'd want nothing to do with that.
Do you know, I tell you, if you want some fun on the next podcast with Jamie, ask him about his attempts to improve upon the marine toilet when he lived on a boat in the Bahamas. He's got a half hour of storytelling that is solid gold.
Oh, we'll definitely get into that.
Yes.
When I was in college, I was looking at buying a houseboat because for what I would rent an apartment for, I could buy a shitty old houseboat, live on the water for a year.
Right.
And the marine toilet was the thing that turned me off of the whole deal. There's no way. It's not for a year. No.
Wow. Don't you just have to like stick a hose in it and pump it out once a week or once a month or something?
Well, this in Tennessee, you just I think you treat it and then out flew. But the larger issue was that it was marine toilets. They make bus toilets and airplane toilets look pretty nice.
It's like living with a porta potty in your house.
Yeah, pretty much. When you go into somebody else's boat and they have a broom handle next to the toilet, just in case you know the narrow throat of the toilet wasn't able to handle what you'd done to it. I realized I didn't want anything to do with that. Should we start a podcast? Should we talk about stuff?
Yeah, why not? Why not? I just watched a very cool movie last night called Europa Report, which is a super low budget. Mockumentary. I can't say it's a mockumentary because they're not mocking the documentary. Yeah, it's a found footage film, and it's good. It's low budget is clearly visible in a bunch of ways,
like in a bad way or an okay way.
No, in just I guess in an obvious way, like you know the sets are well constructed, but they're almost a little too clean from what we understand real space looks like.
Oh, so you have to describe, let people know it's a space exploration movie set in the near future.
Yes, it's set in the future, a manned mission of, I think, 8 astronauts to one of the moons of Jupiter, Europa, to do samples of the water under the ice on Europa and hopefully to see if there's life on the planet. Of course, that's where the drama comes in.
Oh, go ahead.
It's like an 18 month trip. So you bounce back and forth in time a bit. Testimonials from the astronauts right to a camera. Footage from all over the space station from fixed cameras, each one labeled every time you cut to it. And it is really well constructed. It's a sophisticated and well constructed film. Like I said, some of its budget shows up in some of the CG shots of the exterior of the capsule. I think they're CG. Even if they're model shots, they're still pretty low res. Like the model making isn't as tight as I would have expected.
That's really funny that when you talk about it being low budge, you know, it's not about the actors. It's about the special effects and the model making and the things that catch your eye.
Well, actually, I will say that the acting is universally terrific. Given what the guys had to do, they're the main actor who is one of my favorites right now is Charlton Copley, who played the villain in Elysium and also the South African Mucky Muck who got turned into an alien in District 9. It's noteworthy that Matt Damon said about working with him on Elysium that he has never worked with a better improviser in his life. Charlton Copley is, as far as I'm concerned, can do almost anything. And I find him super compelling.
He was higher on District 9 because he improvised the whole candy, the sweets man scene with the kid alien.
Oh, really?
He's a producer. He was not one of the actors. Yeah. He just sent Peter Jackson a sample of like, oh, this is what a regular Joe in South Africa would look like and would talk like. And they were like, you've got to do this. You've got to play this role.
So you said that it's, I mean, is this like Moon had a kind of a low budget look? Is it the same kind of thing
as that? No. Moon was a far higher budget look than this.
Okay.
But that's not to say that, you know, I guess when we think low budget, often we think things that are dumbly obvious.
I think Capricorn 1, you know?
Yeah. Or I guess Apollo 18.
I didn't see that.
I haven't either, but this is what I've heard.
Okay.
So we think of low budget as meaning like, you know, someone bangs into the set and moves like cardboard. This film doesn't suffer from any of that. It is very well constructed. There's a lot of action on the set. And when there's action, the whole set moves. They really built a set and they can, you know, jiggle it and move it. The weightless stuff that they do and the simulated gravity stuff that they do is really well thought out. They use their money incredibly wisely. So I got to give them huge props for a film that looks fantastic. And I don't think it would be obvious to a ton of people how low the budget probably was. And the acting, like I said, was great.
They wrote the movie so they could work around the low budget. Like you said, there is simulated gravity and they designed it in a way.
Exactly. They have a spinning capsule.
Exactly. So they didn't have to have zero gravity for the whole movie.
Right.
You said it was a documentary at the beginning. It is kind of documentary because the whole movie is framed from a looking back at the mission and looking back at the found footage with commentary from people on Earth, which is that cool perspective of, you know, how do you communicate with people on an 18th month mission?
Exactly. Exactly. I will say that having just read, it has a dramatist's idea of what space exploration is like and what astronauts are like. And having just spent some time with Commander Chris Hadfield and having read his book, An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth, I happen to know that astronauts are nothing like the characters portrayed in this movie. You know, at one point, something goes beep and someone in the crew goes, "What the hell was that?" And the fact is at NASA, they have such a culture of training for every possible worst case scenario. That's all they do is train and make mistakes and go over those mistakes until when they're actually in space, everything that happens is expected, even the things they didn't expect. And you don't get to be an astronaut unless you respond coolly to large pressures. They learned early on with some of the Mercury and early Apollo flights that there were specific personality types that turned out did not make great astronauts. So by this point in the future, the idea that people would be like, "Shut up, what's going on?" You know, in the middle of a landing, it just wouldn't ever happen.
Calm people live, right?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if you've ever listened to, it's actually quite an experience, or read the transcripts of black box flight recordings of planes that crashed.
No, but that sounds really,
it seems
morbid.
Grim, yeah.
It is super grim. There was an off-Broadway show in New York years ago that was nothing but dramatic reenactments of it. And the thing that you will find most shocking is how calm everybody is. I almost always, just before the end, there's an "oh shit" or something like that, which they usually edit out of respect for the families, honestly. But for the most part, you hear pilots going, "All right, it's been a pleasure working with you. I'm really sorry about this." And then they crash. Like,
Jesus.
These folks who train to do this stuff really train, and they get those jobs because they are unflappable. You want someone like that flying a 747 through a storm. You want someone like that piloting the ISS through a, you know, solar storm.
Adam, have we talked about the movie Sunshine, the Danny Boyle movie?
We haven't, and I haven't seen it.
Oh my goodness!
Oh wow, really?
Okay, is it really worth seeing?
Is
it good?
Totally worth seeing. At least okay. To talk about.
Okay.
A lot of people criticize the third act. But
I've heard about the third act.
Third act's real bad.
But the first,
it's fucking terrible.
The first two
really bad is
fantastic.
I've heard about that.
It's worth watching the first two thirds.
It's a movie that I think like Europa Report kind of borrows a little from in terms of trying to be a realistic, large crew, long distance mission.
Yeah.
And the one thing that bugs me in both of these movies, there's always a scene where, you know, something goes wrong and then the crew decides they have to vote. The vote on what to do next.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that never seems like it's the right thing to do.
Well, I don't see that.
Oh, the thing we learned when we were in Houston, and we were talking to the guys in the who run the underwater, you know, the swimming pool where they train for spacewalks.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, what happens if something breaks that you don't know about? And like, that contingency is planned. They know that there are 13 things that require an immediate spacewalk to repair as soon as possible. That's all the stuff that can break, and they've planned all that stuff out. So there should never be a situation that they have to vote. Not only is the vote ridiculous, the fact that they have to vote also is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, the idea that they hadn't thought through all this stuff, like what about a landing? Well, we talked about it a little bit. It's, yeah. I will say I'm gonna put a spoiler out here if it's okay with you, Will.
I can't hear you.
Okay, cool. I really like the bit, Norm, at the end when you think, because you see the girl talking throughout the film, that she survives.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize that what you're watching is her last minutes.
And it's great because they zoom out kind of, and the backdrop is how they fool you.
Yeah, it's great. I thought that was a lovely kind of surprise I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
So this is on Netflix. I can go watch it. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Totally, I watched it on Amazon Instant last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
We let's see. We watched the World's End, the Simon Pegg.
I haven't seen that. That's on my list. I did watch This Is the End with.
I thought that was great. Seth Rogen and
Michael Cera is my new hero.
Did you see? So This Is the End also was the last movie rented at a Blockbuster. That movie
that didn't happen by accident.
Are you sure?
No, that's no more accident than the Buggles video killed the radio star being the first video on MTV.
Right.
Did you see the thing with Michael Cera and his long text conversation with a random person?
I did, but that's manufactured. He wrote that.
I think he wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm clear that he totally wrote that.
It's pretty good as a piece of writing.
Yeah. I guess I found it kind of weird.
That's what he's going for.
But maybe that's exactly what the point was. Oh, can I talk about something? Moon. You guys have both seen it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So Moon spoilers incoming.
No. Okay. I couldn't bear it. I lasted 20 minutes. But the trick is that he's a clone, right? Is that what it is?
That is.
Yeah.
That is.
Okay. Yeah, I figured that out 10 minutes in, and I was like, ah, Christ,
that,
I can't take this click.
That's not the point. The point isn't that's not like supposed to be a reveal. It's more about how do you, you have to watch it, and we should talk about it. You should watch it again, and we should talk about it.
Is clone slavery okay?
I found it excruciatingly boring. What's that?
Is clone slavery okay?
Well, according to George Lucas.
Adam, I think that because there's a guy for The Atlantic looking up Netflix subgenres.
And yeah.
It's really funny that, you know, how they can categorize
raunchy independent laboring comedies.
Oh, yeah. Or, you know, talking animals that are judgmental to you or something like that. Like something ridiculous. And it makes you think about what type of movies you like. And like you can say, I like science fiction movies or like I like space movies. But I realize I like hard sci-fi movies with very few actors where it's just one on one.
Yeah.
And like you think about movies
almost.
And you think about movies like 2001, you know, the third act of that, it's just one on one mostly.
Yeah.
Even a movie like Solaris, it's mostly one on one. And a movie like Moon, it is one on one, but he's playing both roles.
Right.
And as an acting challenge, I think that is tremendous.
I totally agree. And remind me that because I'm old and my brain doesn't work, the name of the actor
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
Sam Rockwell is one of my favorite actors. I think he's phenomenal. And I've loved him ever since his amazing transformation in a freaking great movie, Charlie's Angels, when he plays the villain.
Oh, yes.
Is he Charlie's Angels?
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, the bad guy.
He's also in Galaxy Quest.
Oh, no, he's amazing in Galaxy Quest as the red shirt. What's my name?
Yeah.
His worst role, though, has to be Iron Man 2.
Right? Oh, it does have to be Iron Man. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't think that's his fault. I don't blame him.
No, I don't know who to blame. I'm sorry, Jon Favreau. I love you, but I didn't like Iron Man 2.
He was in Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford.
Oh, really?
Which is a great movie.
Is it really?
It's a fantastic. If you like Westerns, if you don't like Westerns, you're not going to like it. But I think it is a phenomenal
movie.
That's
Casey Affleck.
I want to know why Casey Affleck isn't more famous. Yeah. I want him to be more famous.
I don't know. It's Brad Pitt's in that too, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not sure. I just
no. That's funny.
Thinking
Brad
probably,
Pitt's in that too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been really glad with the ascent of Joaquin Phoenix. You know, the sibling of the super famous. Is sort of an ignominious position. See Jim Belushi's appearances on Lifetime Network. But you know, Joaquin is, I think, one of the best actors going right now. And I also think that who are we just talking about?
Casey Affleck.
I lost my train of thought. Casey Affleck is fantastic. He's really, really, really good. And, you know, he played goofballs for a long time, but he's got real chops.
He directs too, doesn't he? Or no? He's just an actor. I'm looking now. Sorry.
He's directed by his brother.
He has been directed by his brother.
Gone, Baby Gone.
No, he directed I'm Still Here.
Oh.
The Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, well, there goes your full circle.
It all wraps back in on itself.
It's the singularity has been reached.
I don't think we're going to do any better than that.
So there was what happened. You guys froze for a minute after I spoke, and then there was nothing. And then you just piped in, and I heard you go, he's just an actor. It was almost like an admonition of me, like, shut up talking about this guy.
Well, so the funny thing is all through this, and the people watching will be able to tell when it happens to us, but not when it happens to you, because your video freezes. And usually you end up talking for a little bit and we come in right at the punchline. So it's been an exercise in improv podcasting, I guess, is what we would
call
this.
That's good. I'm looking forward to trying this from another city entirely.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again next week.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I guess that'll do it for us this week. And good luck with your show tonight. You're in, you said,
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis tonight,
Milwaukee tomorrow. I'm not sure where after that. I'm New York on Friday. I'm very excited. Ooh. I have a ton of friends coming to see the show, including a couple of people I greatly admire and I'm looking forward to meeting.
Are you going to go get pork buns? What's your food strategy for New York?
Oh my goodness. I haven't even thought about the food strategy for New York. I have so much press and meetings during the day. My only thinking was that I really wanted to get to a couple of stores that I love while I'm there. The Paul Smith store on Fifth Avenue is one of my favorite places in the world. So I haven't even thought of a New York food strategy, and I really need to. Oh, it's time. Yeah, it's time to reach out to some folks.
It's important. Yeah, that's serious business. Well, yeah. Have a good rest of your trip, Adam, and we'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
All right, guys.
And we'll be back next Tuesday with another edition of Still Entitled. Probably. I don't know. We'll see if the Wi-Fi holds. Yes. Until then, see you guys later.
Bye. Okay. Bye.
Bye.